first you told us only through you could we know God, and if we dared to question, he wouldn't spare the rod. For you we worked the soil, for you we dug the moors, for you we shed our blood and fought so many pointless wars. And now you try to tell us there's nothing we can do. You say the world around us belongs fairly to the few, but about 6 billion people no doubt will agree this world is our home, not your property. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you who would enclose the land all around the earth, our future is your downfall when we cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. With our sweat we built the railroads, built cities on these shores. But because you own the money, you see that it's all yours. We laid the phone lines and the pipelines, and then right before our eyes, you see these things are taxes paid for. You now will privatize. Privatize the hospitals. Privatize the schools, privatize the prisons for all those who break your rules. And preparing for the day when all the wells run dry, you say you own the very rain that falls down from the sky. But it's the commons, our right of birth. And you who'd own the water all around the earth, our future is your downfall when they cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. You claim to own the harvest with your Terminator seeds. You claim to own the genomes of every animal that breeds. You claim to own our culture and the music that we play. And with each song that we download to your coffers we must pay. You'd even own my name and you'd say it's for the best. Maybe you'll let us on your radio if our songs can pass your test. You own country, you own Western, you say you've given us a choice. You may own the airwaves, but you'll never own my voice. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you who'd own the music all around the earth, our future is your downfall when you cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you who would own everything all around the earth, our future is your downfall when you cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain.
The opinions expressed on Corporations and Democracy are those of our guests and the hosts, and not necessarily of the management of Mendocino County Public Broadcasting. Good evening, and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for February 20th, 2025. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scalmanini with co-host Annie Esposito. Today is exactly a month since the inauguration of the second Trump administration. And the maneuvering by the executive branch is fast and furious to dismantle what is known as the liberal consensus for the role of the federal government, which has been in effect for 90-plus years, since back in the Roosevelt administration. Recent news out of Washington, D.C. is frightening to anyone who either receives income from a Social Security program or is counting on receiving such income after they retire. With us today to discuss the risks to the Social Security program and what is going on in Washington is John Baumann. John is a senior advisor to Social Security Works, a non-government organization created in 2010 to protect and maybe even expand Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid to lower drug prices and guarantee health care as a human right. John is also the president of Social Security Works PAC. That's the Political Action Committee of Social Security Works. John is a magna cum laude graduate of Columbia University in New York. His understanding of government policies for seniors, combined with the show business side of politics, makes him uniquely qualified to advocate for seniors. And that show business qualification is due to an earlier career over numerous decades as none other than the character Bowser in the doo-wop revival group Sha-na-na, popular in the 1970s for touring and hosting their own television series back then. after appearing on stage at the Woodstock Music Festival in 1969. Yes, that Woodstock Music Festival. And so let's welcome to the air John Bowser and look at social security or social insecurity. What's going on in Washington? John Bowser Bauman, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Oh, it's great to be here. And I wish I were actually physically there with you. I'm in the Santa Ynez Valley, you know, in the central part of the state. Mm-hmm. But as I told you a little bit earlier, before the show started, my wife and I, my wife of 53 years and I, and we were living in New York at the time that this happened. We held our marriage ceremony in Elk, California.
All right.
So there you are, Elk.
Not that far from you. And I still think, you know, we think to this day, we went back through a few years ago. Our daughter lives in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And we took the trip up the coast again from where we are all the way to Portland. And we stopped where we got our wedding rings in Marshall. And then we went on to Elk, mm-hmm. and tried to find the thicket in which we got married. And then we went to Heritage House, where we stayed. Yeah, it's just a beautiful part of the country where you are.
A beautiful place where beautiful things happen. And I guess you've been just about everywhere as the base of Sha-na-na. So it's really great to see you today traveling all over the country, stabilizing all of us in this moment of really chaos. I don't know what else to call it. It's
social insecurity is a pretty good description. That Steve gave. I think that's fairly accurate. But and we're doing our best to stabilize it. You know, and during this hour, I think we'll review both some good news and some bad news.
Okay.
With regard to this, it isn't all bad news.
Right. We do want to end with a, you know, kind of a pep talk. There is stuff people can do that and are doing. And, but right now we're watching Elon Musk just take apart all the federal agencies one by one. And now he's inside the Social Security Administration and with AI and all of his tech buddies. What kind of power does that give him?
Well, the first thing that's happened, which we really do have to be concerned about, is that they got their mitts on everybody's data. And they really do have their, you know, tremendous amount of personal data that goes along with the getting inside the Social Security Administration. And we fear to say they've got it. So people, you know, your privacy is already compromised. Now, what they're going to be able to do with it, we don't know. What they're going to try to do with it, we don't know. But the mere fact that they have it is something that everyone should. These people have no right to have any of your personal information at all. This is, you know, Doge basically, number one, doesn't really even have a right to exist. And there's multiple lawsuits about Doge. We think this whole thing is really an end run. Let me frame this way. Mm-hmm. My belief is that Donald Trump has about 18 months to try to destroy the institutions of the United States of America, the cherished institutions of the United States of America that have kept us as, you know, an imperfect but some sort of a democracy for 250 years. After those 18 months, we're going to be in the midterm elections, assuming that there are midterm elections.
Right. They're working on that, too.
Right. But I think there will be. I think we can fend this off well enough. And again, that's where the good news starts to come in, that there will be midterm elections. And they're probably going to be the most brutal midterm elections for an administration that there have ever been in the history of the country. If it weren't for the gerrymandering, I would almost guarantee that they will be the most brutal midterm elections in the history of the country. Mm-hmm. So he's got a time period. And, you know, as you can see, they're starting off like the proverbial house on fire, trying to ruin as much as they can, as fast as they can. And Doge is one of the vehicles that they're using to do that, because they are trying to skirt Congress as much as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And I think during this hour, we'll probably get into the ins and outs of what they can skirt Congress about and what they can't skirt Congress about. But there's a lot to know about what can be done by executive order, what can try to be done by executive order, what may get shut down in the courts, what must be done by Congress. And the good news is this tiny margin that they have in, especially the House of Representatives, is going to really trip them up. It already is. You can already see publicly that the Republican caucus in the House is at odds with itself. Not surprisingly, I mean, these are largely the same people that took 15 votes to elect a Speaker of the House not that long ago.
Yeah, a few years ago.
Right. And they are not in agreement with each other about hardly anything. Because of the nature of your show, which I love being on,
yeah.
And your obvious understanding that corporate America is really running America and has been for a very long time, and it's not generally to our good, I think it's fair to say at the outset that there's one thing that the Republican caucus does agree about, and maybe one thing only. And that one thing is we need to give massive tax cuts to the richest donors and biggest corporations. And that's the thing we agree on. So the question that they're really asking themselves within that Republican caucus is, okay, how do we get there? That's all we care about. Mm-hmm. How do we get there? And it's largely our job to try to stop them. That's the one thing that I think we're going to have the hardest time to stop them from doing, because that's the thing they really want to do.
Right. So do you want to talk a little bit about the administrative massacre over at Social Security? The acting administrator resigned, I assume. That was under intense pressure. And now they have a new acting administrator to be followed by Trump's designated appointee, Frank Bisignano, who has quite a history. What's going on at the top over there?
And that was just 2 days ago, I think.
Yeah, just.
Yeah. Well, okay. So what actually happened is that Michelle King, who was a very good and longtime functionary, you know, resigned. Yeah, she resigned under pressure, but she also resigned out of protest because she saw what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. So then they installed. He had to go through 120 people. That's worth knowing that. Before he found this guy Dudek somewhere in the bowels of the Social Security Administration, who was willing to, you know, basically shovel them the data,
mm-hmm.
shovel Musk and the Doge team. And by the way, we found out today who the Doge team is. You know, they're commonly being called muskrats. These, you know, sort of 20-somethings or 19-somethings.
Yeah, half a dozen of them or so that are, yeah, 19 to 24
right, who are,
or something
who
like
are
that.
Actually rifling through your personal data, mm-hmm. all of our personal data. And the most noteworthy thing about them is that one of them is the kid who was forced to resign because of his massive amount of racist tweets that he had mm-hmm. sent mm-hmm. and then was brought back. Right?
Mm-hmm.
A few days ago.
Sounds like their boy.
Right. So that kid, Marco, somebody or another, is one of the five people who are rifling through all your data. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of as bad as it gets in that regard. Mm-hmm. But what I can say about the simplest way to put the big picture of this is that we still believe that we can fight off whatever they're going to try to do with regard to Social Security, Medicare. Medicaid is the thing that's going to come up fastest. Mm-hmm. And then there's, of course, the other great big senior issue, which is the lowering of drug prices that was accomplished in the Biden administration, which, you know, makes a big difference in people's lives. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the four general topics. But if we stick on to Social Security right now, they have a lot of obstacles in really decimating Social Security. And honestly, we think they're doing it. They're trying to do it through DOGE because they have so many obstacles to try to do anything with it legislatively. And they know it's the third mm-hmm. rail of American politics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their caucus in there, they still have, especially in the House, you know, the Senate's no bargain for them either. They have a pretty slim margin in the Senate, too. But they're worse off in the House. They've really only got a 2-seat majority right now to play with. And they've got a lot of people who won in relatively moderate swingy districts who won by very slim margins, and they can only afford to lose 2 in any vote. So there's already a lot of angst and consternation within the Republican caucus about various plans to cut things that the Freedom Caucus, you know, the real crazies, think, okay, this doesn't go far enough, but the more moderate side of their caucus is going like, I can't vote for this in my district, and mm-hmm. I'm just not going to. So this is where they may start to show more courage than they were able to show in the nominations, which are more speculative. You know, the nature of the cabinet nominations is a little more speculative, like, okay, these people are going to be horrible, but they haven't done anything yet. Mm-hmm. So we can pretend that they're going to be less horrible than they're going to be. This other stuff, it's going to be hard to fake it.
Well, Social Security, you're saying that you called it the third rail of politics. I mean, it's so popular, everybody loves it. Oh, But they're doing it, right? They're in there mucking around in it already.
But that's their biggest problem, Annie. Their biggest problem is that everybody loves it. And they know good and well that every poll that's ever been done has the same result, which is that somewhere between 80 and 90% of everybody, not just Democrats, but independents, and Republicans don't want their Social Security cut. Period. That's the most important thing that you need to know, is that this, first of all, it affects everybody. It affects everybody, or affects Democrats, Republicans, and independents equally. And none of them, no one wants these programs, the big programs cut, Social Security and Medicare. I mean, the simple starting point for me usually, you know, if I'm giving a Social Security talk, you know, and somebody introduces me as Bowser, like Steve did.
You know, Bowman it is, right?
My starting point is, you know, I do the Bowser flex mm-hmm. and the big mouth, which we can't show it on radio.
Too bad.
And I say, can you believe I've been making a living for over 50 years doing this? God bless America. You know, and go on to say, so, you know, I love the music of the 50s and the 60s, but that does not mean that I actually want to return to the 50s or the early 60s, because I don't want to return to a time before Medicare mm-hmm. when over 35% of American seniors had incomes below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. And that's a fact. And I certainly don't want to return to a time before Social Security was passed in 1935, because before Social Security, over 50%, more than one out of every two American seniors had incomes below the poverty line. It's a simple fact that Social Security mm-hmm. and Medicare are the two most successful domestic programs in the entire history of the United States of America, and we need to keep them that way. In fact, we actually need to expand them. And you mentioned that, Steve, in your intro. It's true, but for a period of time in here, we're in defense. We're playing defense.
Yeah, to hang on to what we have. I like to mention, remind listeners of how one of the beginnings of Social Security and the idea to do it in the first place is the, you know, people in government at that time that were a little annoyed looking at, you know, senior citizens out dumpster diving to be able to eat And that was a thing back in the 20s, 10s, et cetera, you know, that before Social Security came along, which is social insurance for, you know, for us getting into the elder year. So.
Correct. It's an insurance program. It's a universal insurance program. And the most fundamental, you know, it has several parts. There is disability insurance, which is terribly important. There is survivor's insurance, which is terribly important. But the core of Social Security is it's insurance against the time it's when you can no longer work or, you know, don't want to work, you know, because of old age. Mm-hmm. And consequently, it's insurance against the loss of your wages. Mm-hmm. So this affects everybody. It applies to everybody. It's critically important. And just like you said, our version of it, or my version of it, has to do with remembering my father saying, we're heading to the poorhouse, which was an expression, you know, of our youth that's kind of faded away, you know, in younger generations. And, you know, even I as a kid thought of it when my dad said it as kind of a figure of speech until I started doing this work and really understood that where that expression came from was there was such a thing as the poorhouse.
It's real, yeah.
Correct. And when you didn't, when you were among those people in the 50%, you know, that I was talking about, who of seniors who were below the, who were living below the poverty line, and if your kids didn't take you in and your family didn't help you out, that's where you ended up, was heading to the poorhouse, which is pretty much like your similar version of rummaging through the trash.
Yes, right. And just to feed themselves.
Times have changed. The programs have been massively successful. You know, if you carefully analyzed my previous statement, you would come to the conclusion that Medicare actually has kept just as many, if not more, people out of poverty, more seniors out of poverty than even Social Security, for the simple reason that medical bankruptcy is the single biggest cause of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Still remains to this day. And, you know, everybody knows how much hospital bills really are and how impossible it is for anybody to pay them.
But so they're looking at this huge amount of money that gets paid out in Social Security, but it's our money, isn't it? I mean, I've paid into it.
Number one. Okay, that's the most critical thing of all to understand. And at Social Security Works PAC, where, you know, I work to elect better people so we don't have to fight with them later, we have five questions that we ask of candidates. Will you support protecting and expanding Social Security? Will you support protecting and expanding Medicare? Will you support Medicaid expansion as defined in the Affordable Care Act? Will you fight to lower drug prices? And the fifth question is the one that you have put your finger on, which is, will you always refer to Social Security and Medicare as earned benefits and never use the pejorative term entitlements, which sadly is even in the legislative language, and even some, you know, people occasionally who are on our side, you know, slip up and use the word entitlements and we just slap them on the wrist. You know? You can't do that. Remember, you pledged not to do that. They are your earned benefits. This is your money, listeners. It is your money. It doesn't belong to anybody but you. And Elon Musk cannot get his mitts on it, and we're not going to let him.
You brushed on a topic a moment ago that I want to explore just in a little bit more depth. But first of all, let me remind listeners, we're speaking with John Bowser Bauman, the president of Social Security Works PAC. And we're talking about the social security or social insecurity, what's going on in Washington, D.C. regarding this and other related programs. And the question I wanted to ask is that the Social Security is funded by a huge pot of money. It is $2.8 trillion.
Dedicated money only belongs to Social Security and is in two trust funds that are entirely separate from the rest of the money that the government has. So there's another move. Every time you hear this is the big, you can't balance the budget because of Social Security. Social Security is not even actually technically on the federal
budget.
It's
not in the budget, right.
It separate, self-sustaining. Yeah,
separate program.
So that in and of itself is a lie.
Mm-hmm.
As are many other things, like, you know, it's going bankrupt. It's going to be bankrupt in 2034 or 2035. That's false, too. It's just made up. The fact is, if nobody even lifted a finger between now and 2034, Social Security would still pay out 80% of its benefit in 2034. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not good enough, but it's also not bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
It's 80%. So that's just a scare tactic that gets used. You know, look, we're a nonpartisan organization, but, you know, that questionnaire that I just told you I send it out to in every open seat election. I don't send it out to people who have already shown that they're enemies of the program, mm-hmm. and are incumbents, because mm-hmm. I'm not going to give them a chance to lie on a questionnaire. But I send it out in every open seat election, and to be truthful, I have never gotten it back from one Republican candidate ever.
Interesting.
It just goes right in the trash bin.
Mm-hmm.
Because the truth is that that party, it shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't be this way. There's no reason for it to be this way. And like I said earlier, their voters are just as dependent on the programs as Democratic voters,
mm-hmm.
and independent voters the same.
Yeah.
But this has become a real consistent thing where the programs are threatened from one side of the aisle all the time. And even now, it's going on right now. Look, we're right in the middle of something that I'm sure in the second half of this show we'll get into,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, Donald Trump, whatever else we want to say about him, he has some understanding of how to get votes. And what he has to say to get votes. Now, the fact that he's lying is a really serious problem. But we have mailers that went out to every senior in Pennsylvania from Donald Trump saying, cut your Social Security or your Medicare or your Medicaid. And he's been saying he says it virtually every day now. And yet yesterday, he endorsed a House budget that cuts $880 billion out of Medicaid,
mm-hmm.
when in the same day he said, I'm not going to cut your Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow or another, this is going to have to be squared by, you know, their feet are going to be held to the fire, and somebody's going to have to admit that they're lying.
I'm waiting now, for the day.
What I was leading into a couple minutes ago was about, you know, a pot of money, almost $3 trillion.
Yep.
And then the Medicaid funding I'm not as familiar with, so maybe you can enlighten us on some of that. But what can they do? What could they practically do? This, if they cut benefits, there's still going to be a big pot of money there. It'll just get bigger.
So right now, so what you're referring to, Steve, is that right now, Social Security has about a $2.8 to $2.9 trillion surplus.
Mm-hmm.
The issue before this last election, which has thrown us into a different set of problems and mm-hmm. thrown us onto defense instead of offense. Before the last election, all of us who work on senior issues were looking to expand the program,
mm-hmm.
not just protect the program, Social Security, but to expand the program and to make sure that it stays solvent into the 22nd century.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a bill, for instance, a really moderate common sense bill by a really moderate Democratic congressman, John Larson from the Hartford, Connecticut area, mm-hmm. who also happened to be chair of the Social Security subcommittee mm-hmm. of Ways and Means. So he had a very important position, which now he's the ranking member because we no longer have Democrats no longer have control of those of the committees. But the Larson bill, called Social Security 2100, was a very sort of common sense way to deal with the projected shortfall in the early to mid 2030s that Social Security is going to experience. The simple way to explain this is that current Social Security is a pay-go program. current workers pay for current retirees. Mm-hmm. As a result, there have been times in the history of the program where if there are more retirees, you know, mm-hmm. at a given moment, then there are workers' contributions, the program can get stressed. And there is a projection that in that 2034-35 period, the program is likely to be stressed. By the way, it's not a sure thing if we have a roaring economy at that time. It may not happen at all. Mm-hmm. But it still only makes sense to make some simple common sense changes to the program to ensure that the money is always going to be there for everybody the same way that it has been since 1935. It's never missed a payment. Mm-hmm. So we can get into that if you want. You know, right now is kind of a good time to talk about the kind of things that really should be done
mm-hmm, sure.
to not only protect Social Security, but also expand the program. The most important expansions that can be done would be to improve the cost of living adjustment. Mm-hmm. The what's called CPI is really unfairly calculated, and we need to go to something called CPIE, which ensures that which understands that the cost of living for older people actually goes up faster than it does for anybody else, because the cost of health care go up faster than any other part of the economy. Mm-hmm. So CPIE is necessary. You know, there's a bunch of adjustments that need to be made to the program, and we have to deal with this projected shortfall. Now, the simplest way to deal with it has to do with the cap. And do you guys know about the cap?
That's the annual income cap above yes, which you don't pay any. Yeah,
right. So the current cap, so the nature of the cap is that above the cap, no one pays in one more cent on their income, mm-hmm. zero. So the current cap is $176,100. And the cap has been there since the program was passed. There was actually Republican Party opposition to this program when FDR passed it.
with
the help and actually beyond the help, more than help, of one of the greatest women in American history and in American government, Frances Perkins.
Yay. We worship her.
FDR's Secretary of Labor, who mm-hmm. really was the push behind Social Security in the first place. So when Frances Perkins and FDR got Social Security passed, they still had to compromise on some things. And one of the things was the cap. The cap, you know, does get adjusted for inflation over a period of time. So now it's 176.1. And that means, simply put, that everybody pays in 6.2% of their income up to $176,100 mm-hmm. to payroll tax, and that funds Social Security. But you stop paying above $176,100. Yep. Mm-hmm. So since we've already done a little bit of talking about Elon Musk, you know, so let's throw him back into this mix. He stopped paying at $176,100 worth of income. I don't know how much money here.
A little more than that.
He ain't paying 6.2%, mm-hmm. guys. He's paying 0.00000000000. I could take up the rest of the show with zeros, right? 1% of his income into Social Security.
And he wants more.
He's going to get money back. It's a universal program, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So the question for your listeners is that fair? And the answer, I can hear him saying it right now, is no, it's not fair. Why is there this cap? So the Larson bill, Social Security 2100, actually didn't scrap the cap, which, hey, scrap the cap is great for me, because remember Sean, you know, the theme song was yip 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 boom, sha-na-na, 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 right?
Yep.
So all I can think of is with scrap the cap is yip 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 boom, scrap the cap, yeah, scrap the cap.
I like it. Let's bring that back.
Yeah, but scrapping the cap is probably not a practical idea, because in very high-income areas like, you know, let's say San Francisco or Los Angeles or New York City, or, you know, if you just scrap the cap and everybody has to pay at $176,000, starting at $176,101, some people are going to argue, well, that's a middle-class income where I am, you know, in this big city. So you got to fend off the opposition that's going to claim that's the biggest middle class. You know, Republican Party is immediately going to say that's the biggest middle class tax hike in history. We here in Orange County, you know, $200,000 is an average is an average income. You can't even live on that, kind of thing. So the Larson bill and President Joe Biden, you know, set that tax hike number at 400K. Like, no one can argue at 400K. Mm-hmm. Like, so it just was, there was kind of a donut hole in the cap. You didn't pay in more at 176, between 176.1 and 400. And then everybody started paying in again, and that would have financed. That would have financed well into 2200.
Okay, so there was a second tier above which you would pay, but in between the middle tier, you did not pay additional.
Correct. Okay. So it wasn't scrap the cap. It was kind of put a donut hole in the cap. You know, and the numbers worked out. It extended the program for decades. Mm-hmm. You were able to expand the program. It was a pretty moderate, modest way of, you know, very simple. Now, some people say, and I understand this, although it's not very astute, some people say, well, why didn't you do that when you had control of the Congress? Mm-hmm. And nobody can see me on radio when I say control. I'm doing
air quotes.
Yeah. Because if you guys didn't have to deal with Kirsten Sinema and Joe Manchin.
Yes, right.
That was not control. Uh-huh. There was no such thing as control. And the filibuster on top of it in the Senate.
Indeed, yes.
Right, so that, yes, if you had really good progressive legislators, or not even that progressive, just, you know, sort of moderately progressive legislators, and you had real control, passing something like Social Security 2100 is an absolute slam dunk. And to hear these guys now, you know, this constant, you know, even before this last election, the constant attacks of, oh, you know, this program, Social Security is going bankrupt, and, you know, we have to cut the program because there's no other way to deal with it. That is such BS.
Yes. Hooey, we call it.
Speaking of
beyond hooey, right?
let me slip in that we're speaking with John Baumann, the president of Social Security Works, PAC. And we're talking about the risks to the Social Security system in the current administration going on right now, literally right now. This week is relevant. Our title for the program is Social Security or Social Insecurity. What's going on in Washington?
Okay, so the other thing that we're hearing, the aforementioned Elon Musk is saying there's all this fraud, and there's these people that are 300 years old that are collecting paychecks. What do you have to say to that?
Well, you know, they pulled that back.
Basically. Oh, did they? I keep hearing reverberations of it. But yes, I think.
Okay. And I don't mean to oversimplify, because it's very important that we recognize the extent to which they pulled it back and the extent to which they didn't. Mm-hmm. Now, what did happen was that yesterday, the Cato Institute, which is further to the right than the Heritage Foundation. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is really pretty much in right-wing think tank world, as far right as you can go. Uh-huh. The Cato Institute actually said, oh, you know what? Yeah, that's really wrong. That's and I saw this yesterday. I'm like, wow, okay, that's incredible. That was really quick. It was like a day after, you know, Elon, you know, a few days after Elon and the Muskrats came up with this absurd contention that 150-year-old people were all getting Social Security and there was millions and millions of dollars. And then this other woman, Trish Regan, who you know, is a podcast, a right wing, you know, podcaster. But again, nobody's going to be confused with any of us She also said yesterday on her program, it's like, yeah, you know what? That just really wasn't true. So it just really isn't true.
Yeah. Only took a few days.
Yeah, it took almost no time at all. What really happened, I don't know that there's any good faith in this effort at all. But it seems like, among other things, Musk and the Muskrats didn't understand COBOL, which is the program, which is the old software.
Yes, old software. People were worried about COBOL software going into the millennium, the debacle might happen. So much software was written in COBOL back in the, 70s, 60s, maybe the 80s, but it's, obsolete code by today's
standards. And the code is a little bit outdated, but, a lot of the code was designed. Like, there's one thing, not to get too far in the weeds, but there was one thing where if somebody's address was incomplete, it defaulted to that you were 150 years old. Well, of course, Elon Musk, conveniently decided to interpret that as there are thousands, millions of people who are 150 years old on the rolls here, and they're all getting Social Security checks. Okay, so that is false. It was always false. It's a political, it's a willful attempt to deceive. Okay, so it's been established that it's false, but that does not mean that Donald Trump has stopped saying it. He hasn't stopped saying it.
Right, correct. He's still out there.
He's going to continue to say it, because they have learned a long time ago, especially Donald Trump learned a long time ago, that same thing with the 2020 election, just keep repeating the lie. And keep repeating the lie and say it over and over and over again on Fox News, so-called news, and OAN and, various podcasts and blogs. And the people who only listen to those things for their so-called information will believe it anyway. So why should you tell them the truth? Just don't.
Well, you mentioned, listeners, that once again, we're speaking with John Baumann, president of Social Security Works, PAC, about the safety and status of the Social Security system and related Medicare and Medicare other programs. If you want to get in on the conversation with any questions or comments, the number here is 895-2448. That's in area code 707-895-2448.
I think that in addition to there not being any fraud, whatever is going on that's wrong is really quite low, very low percentage for something that big. And I think you could argue that it's an extremely well-run operation, the Social Security. Do you want to talk about that?
That was established in the IG's report, that also was reviewed by every responsible news outlet within the past few days. Our founder, actually, Nancy Altman, who knows more about Social Security than anybody in America, she's written 4 books on the subject, has been interviewed by the Washington Post, the New York Times, every major network. She did 60 Minutes, just called her today on all these, on these exact subjects. And there is, Social Security is really an insurance program. Okay, so let's compare the Social Security Administration to any insurance company in America. There is less fraud in Social Security Administration and always has been, than way less than any insurance company that you've ever heard of. Virtually nothing. It was interesting yesterday that both the Cato Institute and Trish Regan, like I said there's really very little, almost no fraud in Social Security. So Elon's barking up the wrong tree.
He's out there in Mars orbit or something. Confirm for us what I did read in one article. The trend in the administrative costs of Social Security has been down and down and down over the last generation or two. It's just the efficiencies of administering the program are extremely low and getting lower.
We think that this is part of the scheme. And it's a dangerous part of the scheme for what the overall objective is, which is to make the program fail, is that the Social Security Administration itself has been starved of funding, so that too many offices have closed, too many times you'll try to call the Social Security office with a question and you don't get anybody, you know, you can't get anybody. And this is going to get worse. You know, they're going to trim. The one thing he's probably going to be able to do, like he's been doing to every federal agency, including the national parks, you know, USAID, you know, pick one. Mm-hmm. He's not going to close down the Social Security Administration because too many people depend on it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they'll try to trim the workforce so that it functions less well.
Yeah, can't provide the service that it does today.
Mm-hmm. Right. It'll provide the services that it provides will be less effective and efficient. And then they'll say, well, see, the program doesn't work. It just doesn't work. That's why we have to privatize it, which is the ultimate. Before all this happened, what they really have been trying to do was privatize it. Was, you know, remember there was this big push in 2005-06 during the Bush administration.
Indeed. I'd like your 2 cents on, well, what does that mean? You know, we have this pot of money, almost $3 trillion. So what does it mean?
So what privatization is about, obviously, is that, well, your money could do much better on Wall Street, let's say. Why don't you just take this money that $2.9 trillion is now sitting in U.S. Treasury bills, which up until now, I'm not so sure during the Trump administration, but up until now, they've been the safest investment in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, other countries invested in them because they're the safest investment in the world. Obviously, right after the failed attempt of the George W. Bush administration to privatize Social Security, remember there was a tremendous economic downturn in 2007-08.
Yeah, 7-8 and into 9, yeah.
That if they had succeeded in privatizing Social Security and a lot of people put their money on Wall Street, you could say goodbye to your money if you had to retire in 2007-08 and access that money. Mm-hmm. So this is the reason why switching from the safest investment in the world to gambling on Wall Street is a really terrible idea for your retirement security.
We have a call that's come in. Can we take a call there?
Sure.
Okay, caller, you're live on the air. What's your first name? From where are you calling? And what's your question?
Randy from Willits. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that my mother, Barbara Champion, fought for Social Security and unemployment insurance during the 50s and 60s. She was a union organizer for the SEIU. Mm-hmm. I call it Stationary Engineers. International Union Service Employees, and I have both a comment and a question.
Okay.
I would have been saying for a long time, we need wages for homemaking, MAWQ, mothers as workers, and I would like to put this out there, that if people got paid for parenting prior to, you know, divorce and prior to, you know, being destitute, that if we could get $20,000 a year, then you'd have more Social Security. You'd have more income to come in, go into the accounts for payment for, you know, elders and for people that needed it. Just a modicum, because we're paying $180,000 a year for criminals who get locked up in prisons. And I think prisons are obsolete. We need schools. We need education. We need nonviolent training. Mm-hmm. We need to have a peace department. So that's my comment, okay?
Okay.
Wages, and I'm going to write this down, mothers as workers. Parents as parents as workers.
And your question
is? We need to talk about that. The other thing is, if you just had a flat rate of $176,000, you know, everybody pays 10%, 20%, whatever it is. Used to be 95% during Roosevelt for the people that were making $1 million. You didn't have people that didn't pay taxes, period. You know, we need to have taxes of wealthy people that are making the millions and billions. They need to pay their share.
Well,
I don't care
indeed,
how they get
indeed.
It, but they need to pay. The rest of us are paying 35% of our income for taxes.
Yeah.
They need to pay 35%.
Well, that three-tiered idea is one way to step in that direction. Okay, Randy, thank you for your call.
Thank you very much.
Your
comment.
No question.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No question that the tax code needed reform. But we ain't getting it now.
Yeah, and that's separate. The Social Security is separate from the tax code. That's the 95% figure she mentioned, or whatever it was.
Really not income tax.
Yeah. And we are getting close to the
first comment is concerned, though, you know, I do want to say, as far as her first comment is concerned, that kind of thing is the kind of expansion that really should be looked at. And mm-hmm. we're in a horrible period right now where we can't look at expansion. We just have to look at protection.
Yeah.
You know, and we're on defense, and we're going to be on defense, and we have to admit it until we get through this time period of the Trump administration. We will not be able to achieve expansion mm-hmm. until we elect better people.
Right. That's the first on the agenda. So we're coming close to the end of the show, and we really need to talk about another threatened entity, which is Medicaid. And that axe is just hovering over our necks right now. Do you want to talk about Medicaid?
That's the most immediately threatened. It really is much harder for them to attack Social Security and Medicare. And, you know, before we get to the end of the program, I want to make sure that I say to everybody, you know, because by now you're probably wondering, why do they attack these programs? They're so popular and everybody loves them. If Democrats, Republicans, and independents love them, why are they attacking them? Well, the answer is, look, if we talked about what the real goal is, which is to privatize Social Security so that people will put their retirement savings on Wall Street, who would love that? Wall Street. Who's going to shower them with unbelievable, unfathomable amounts of campaign contributions mm-hmm. if they ever were seen in doing that? Wall Street. So that's all it's about. It has nothing to do with us. It has to do with how do we get money? Mm-hmm. Same thing with Medicare, yeah. right? Same thing with Medicare. If Medicare, and this has been happening with Medicare Advantage, where it's, you know, yes. a privatization, mm-hmm. right?
We covered that a few years ago, but yes, right.
They would like to fully privatize Medicare, because who would love it if Medicare were fully privatized? The insurance lobby. Mm-hmm. The insurance lobby would shower them with unbelievable, unfathomable amounts of money if they're able to privatize Medicare. Mm-hmm. So now to Medicaid. The most important thing that I want everybody listening to know is that Medicaid pays for almost two-thirds of long-term care in America. Mm-hmm. And this is affecting more and more American families to the point where it's affecting almost every American family. Mm-hmm. Long-term care meaning nursing homes, some assisted living, depending on the state, mm-hmm. home care when, you know, in our later years. This is a function of Medicaid. Too many people think of Medicaid in too limited a fashion. This doesn't only affect, and you know, this is not to say that we're not a 1,000,000% sympathetic to the other things that Medicaid does, mm-hmm. which is pay for meals, pay for kids, you know, pay all kinds of functions mm-hmm. that are covered by Medicaid and nothing else in our society, but long-term care is one of those things that affects everybody, and it's a way to get through to people who think that they're Republicans and, you know, it has nothing to do with me, or they think they're independents and it has nothing to do with them. This affects everybody. Mm-hmm. And Medicaid is the one that's really on the chopping block right now. The Republican Party that's in control is going to have to do something with regard to the budget by March 14th, because that is when this whole debt ceiling crisis, you know, comes to a head okay. again. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to pass a budget. What's going on is they're trying to pass a budget. They're already arguing about what should be in the budget. In the House Republican budget, there are $880 billion of Medicaid cuts. Mm-hmm. They think they can get away with this. But there's already an argument between the more moderate Republicans, you know, and some of them are not that far away from where you are, like David Valadao in California 22 in the Central Valley, you know, who won in a district that is actually has a much higher Democratic registration. This is not going to fly with him. He's a guy who voted to impeach Trump on the second impeachment. Mm-hmm. There's another guy, Dan Newhouse, in the state of Washington, who also voted to impeach Trump in the second impeachment. These are people in swing districts who have a lot of people that are dependent on Medicaid in their districts. And like I said, every family is actually dependent on Medicaid because no one can afford the price of nursing homes mm-hmm. or assisted living. So they're going to fight with each other. They're going to the Freedom Caucus, which thinks that this horrible budget doesn't go far enough, and Medicaid should probably just be eliminated, they're going to claim. And these other guys are going to say, over our dead bodies. And who knows how this is going to turn out. But this is the immediate fight. And we are engaged in the fight at Social Security Works, where we are going to, you know, see where they land in this intramural feud in the Republican Party. But we're going to fight them on every inch, every ounce, every penny of cuts to Medicaid. Medicaid is vitally important for American families. And by the way, there are still 10 states in America, California blissfully not being one of them, of course, that have not even accepted the Medicaid, the free federal Medicaid money from the Affordable Care Act. That is just a sheer disgrace.
Indeed. I had no idea it was that many states. Thank you for that.
And still 10, and states as big as Florida. Mm-hmm. Huge states.
And that's a socialsecurityworks.org, by the way. So people can go there. We should talk about, so what do we do? One of the things would be to support groups like yours, ACLU and everybody, all the people that are out there, Public Citizen, that are doing lawsuits, and the important work at socialsecurityworks.org. Mm-hmm.
Annie found preparing for the program was the Association of Federal Government Employees. That's a union. That's AFGE.org. Again, Association of Federal Government Employees. They published something called the Chaos and Corruption Weekly Digest.
Yeah.
Reading and weep. They're in the front lines right now along with us. They're very close allies of ours.
That's great.
And obviously, you know, federal government employees are tremendously under fire. Mm-hmm. And as we discussed during this program, we could take another 2 hours to discuss all this stuff. Yeah. But as we discussed during this program, the Social Security Administration, which is peopled with AFGE mm-hmm. worker, mm-hmm. right, is under fire. This is one of the things that the Trump administration is going to try to accomplish, is to starve the beast,
starve
the Social Security Administration, make it not work. And we and AFGE and everybody that you mentioned, Public Citizen, you know, we're all allies in this fight. National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, Alliance for Retired Americans. We're all on the same side of this fight. We're all allies in this fight. We have been for a long time. And I just did my last Bowser show last week. After 55 years, I'm retiring from that. And I said at the end of my little piano routine, when I was talking about my mother and her years at PS 45 as a librarian, and how Social Security and Medicare allowed her to live a life of dignity and independence that was completely unknown to my grandparents. Mm-hmm. I said, I may be stopping doing Bowser shows, but I'm never, until I draw my last breath, going to stop fighting for your Social Security, your Medicare, your Medicaid, and to lower your drug prices.
All right.
Great. John Baumann, president of Social Security Works, PAC, and talking about the Social Security or social insecurity. What's going on in Washington right now? So, stay tuned. There will be more news coming out, I'm sure. I know there's a board that'll be switched over. I mean, the board, the trustees of the trust funds is appointed by the president. So I imagine there's going to be some changes there.
We're going to win this, though. Yeah. Public opinion is going to win this.
Yeah.
Hold the line. Don't resign.
Okay.
We're going to win this. And I want to make sure that I have enough time to do my signature sign-off for you guys.
Okay, well, indeed. In that case, let me just mention again, socialsecurityworks.org. And some of the outfits we know are involved in lawsuits these days. One of those is Public Citizen. So you can go to publiccitizen.org. And some, are there others you want to mention real quick? And then
He's got to do his little riff.
It doesn't take very long. I'll actually do two consecutive ones. Bum, 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 bum. I love Social Security. But the big sign off is this one. Do, 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 do. Good night and greet for peace.
All right. Well, all right. Well, I'll sign off for us by saying, what is it? Thank you for being our guest this evening, John Bauman.
Go, Bowser.
And thanks for taking that one call from a listener. And with that, we'll close. It is, this has been Corporations and Democracy. We're here on third Thursday, 7, 8 p.m. And we'll be back next month on Thursday, March 20th. In the meantime, you want to look at the kind of issues we deal with on the program. They're archived and listed at thealliancefordemocracy.org. Thanks for listening.